Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, the time of the morning has just gone 8:17 Central African time. We're joined by none other than our very own Member of Parliament, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, joining us on his segment, Politicking with Ahmad, or Parliamentary Tunes. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tell me, how are you doing this fine, a beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Indeed, what a beautiful, mashallah, day in the city of Cape Town. But otherwise, all is well, and very excited about our presentation at the International Court of Justice. Every one of our legal experts presented the commendable and articulated, of course, the position of South Africa on the genocide that's taking place in Palestine. I think we must give them credit. They have done a fantastic piece of work. They have certainly made a case for Israel to be found guilty of committing genocide and ethnic cleansing, despite the attempt, of course, by the opposition to try and, of course, convince the court that they were acting in self-defense. I think South Africa has made its case. It's just a matter of time now where we will have judgment, and then let's see what happens there.
Ahmad, looking at a message that has come through for you, and it says, Assalamu alaikum, Brother Shafaz Ahmad Khan, really enjoying the program this morning. When our man, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, comes, please address this issue. And I reiterate as follows. South Africa has taken the world by storm, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, by holding Israel accountable for genocide at the highest level. A driving force with a history behind her has been the government, yourself included, and Minister Naledi Pandor. I think that this morning, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, it would be appropriate to dedicate some time to her, that is Naledi Pandor, and yourself, and highlight the activities against oppression and apartheid since the earliest day, right after the groundbreaking current court case. Jazakallah khair. And this comes from our brother here. How would you respond to that, Ahmad?
Jazakallah, my brother. Yes, and thank you very much. We appreciate it. Yes, you are correct. What has happened and the fact that South Africa has taken Israel to the International Court of Justice is as a contribution that has come from many others, including Minister Burr, Naledi Pandor. You've also had the Deputy Minister as well that has been very vocal about the issue of support of Palestinians. Many of us, as you know, we originally initially downgraded the South African embassy in Israel to a liaison office. That was a success story. The next success is Palestinians can now come to South Africa without visas, alhamdulillah, something that never happened before. Despite the difficulties that they've been having to come to South Africa, they were regarded as a serious threat. So yes, indeed, we've done that. We've then gone ahead now and brought a motion which was supported and adopted. Of course, it's not implemented yet, and that is shutting down the Israeli embassy in South Africa, and then, of course, ultimately to going to the International Court of Justice. But over and above that, there's a motion also in Parliament that I have put through, which is calling for the issue of the Israeli Defense Force, South Africans that are serving there, also calling for us to relook at the issue of dual citizenship. When you take citizenship of another country that's particularly committing atrocities and human rights violation, we've asked to deal with that. I've also asked to deal with the issue of illicit financial flows, because you can certainly expect a lot of money to flow into South Africa to try and have a regime change to overthrow the governments here. So these are just some of the things, of course. And then, of course, look at targeted trade boycotts. I must also tell us, while I'm at that, I was speaking to a manager of a very well-known supermarket chain, which is Pick and Pay. And to my surprise, I heard that they are very worried. A guy was showing me a whole lot of Coca-Cola that had expired. Believe me. So it really... without even really targeting some of these products to the extent we would have loved to, it is having an effect on these people. And that is what I heard clearly, and I was actually shown products. Look at these. These are all expired. They can't sell the product because people are boycotting it. So really, it's getting a message. And he went on to say that the owner of this franchise was extremely concerned about the turnover and what was going on. So yes, it's having an effect. Now, coming back to the issue of this International Court of Justice, and commendable, I think we must welcome the decision by South Africa. Our legal team, superb, Brother Shepherd, superb. What a piece of work that they have done. And despite the Israeli defense arguing on defense, that they were acting in defense and that it was premature for South Africa to do. There's no ethnic cleansing, they say. There's no genocide. I don't think they've convinced the court. However, my problem is, let us not forget that in, you know, the judges that are hearing this matter, you have judges there from the United States of America. You have judges there from Germany. You have judges there from France. You have, you know, so you've got judges, you've got a judge from India that is also sitting on that day. So these are some of the things that you're going to have to worry about, the combination of those justices that are there. Now, yes, the argument is that they should be conducting themselves in an ethical manner. Do some of these people understand what is ethics in the first place? And that's what, you know, we're going to have to worry about. So. But very importantly, I think we must remember that no matter which way you look at it, this is a victory for South Africa. It's a victory for Palestine. I think for the first time, despite the fact that many of these big, large media houses boycotted this and did not play it, I'm told. I'm told CNN and others, that is what I heard, I'm not 100%, but that's what I was told, had blocked this particular hearings. But be that as it may, despite that, I think people all over the world are getting a better understanding of exactly what is going on. It perhaps may lead to many others to come in and support. A lot of countries are supporting South Africa in the stance they took. My concern is with those countries that are silent, even countries that we thought that will come out and say certain Muslim countries and things have been silent about these things. Now, you can't be silent when people... when there's genocide and ethnic cleansing and hospitals are being blown up and clinics and schools and, you know, things of that nature. You cannot be, you can't be neutral. There's no such a thing as being neutral. But at the same time, I want to tell you that there can be implications for South Africa. Remember, you've touched the nerves of the Israel, you touched the nerves of the United States of America and those global powers that oppress us and control us, you know. So there will be implications, political implications, sanctions, a lot that can happen. They will attempt to, like I said, change the regime, or the government of the day. So we need to be mindful. We need to come together. We need to consolidate our support and stand together. That is the situation we find ourselves in. Again, I want to say that even though we've made a case and I think we've convinced the world as far as our case is concerned, even if they find Israel guilty, the question now is, will the Zionist state of Israel, who's never complied with any of these things before, will they comply? If they don't, means there is two things. One is, then the countries that are aiding and abetting Israel will have to stop that immediately also, otherwise they will be found guilty. All right. And the second thing is that it can go to the United Nations. And then who controls the United Nations? Look at the veto powers you've got. Some of these countries like the U.S. and others have got. Will they allow that to happen? That's the question that we need to ask. But whatever it is, you know, the fact that we have articulated our position, we've convinced the world, as far as I'm concerned, that indeed Israel is guilty of genocide and ethnic cleansing. That is good enough. We've got the message across. And I think people understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a good friend and our good friend and our brother. Farouk Swakot says, there's a possibility that yet another political party is entering the election bull ring. It is rumored that some high-profile individuals in the community are joining this party. Is it necessary to have so many novice and fledgling parties running the election race? What is the wisdom behind this? The ballot paper is almost 1 kilometer long. Do we need to wear our tracksuits and running shoes on election day? Kindly ask our brother and friend, Ahmad Manzoor, to comment. Hey, Farooq is up to speed enough to beat there, Ahmad.
Yes, Jazakallah for that, brother Farooq. There are many new political parties, and yes, I can tell you that there is a political party that people have been calling for in the country that is emerging. And perhaps, you know, what we need is, I must agree there are a lot of political parties, but the point I think we need to look at is their ethical leadership. You know, you need to look at whether the political party that you want representing you is going to serve your interest and deliver the services that you are looking for, whether they're going to be consistent, whether they're going to ensure there's ethical leadership, they're going to ensure that there's Islamic ethos and principles applied in these things. So yes, to answer your question, there is political parties. There is a political party that, like I said, that many of you have been calling for, and an announcement, I'm told, is going to be made in due course. I'm not at liberty to release that information at this stage, but it's. Remember, there are political parties that are going there for power. They want control. Some are going there because of the benefits that you get there. But then there are also those that want to make a difference in the lives of the people. And I think what you need to look at, what is going to serve your best interest. So you need to look out for that. So whilst there will be new political parties, not every political party is going to be there for the right reasons. Currently, we have so many. Tell me what is different about what is happening right now with the political parties. You'll find some of them are attacking the other one. But go back to where they all govern. Are they making any difference in the lives of the people? Because when the country, you know, I notice something about politics, okay? The people, when they talk about a success, they want to take all the credit for it. But when there is failures by them, then they don't want to talk about the failures. And I believe that even opposition parties are a failure in this country because you are doing nothing to bring the country into the path of prosperity, stability, security, because they're spending more time criticizing and insulting others. And I think you must also look at the issue of policies, whether policies that are being good. You know, politicians can come and tell you, Brother Shepherd, that I am going to give you this and give you that and do this. Are you going to do it? Let me give you a good example. The mineral wealth of this country is in the hands of a few. And I've seen a report. I'm not sure if you saw it the other day or whether you sent it through to me. Every sector and industry that you look at the moment is controlled by the Zionists. Every sector is controlled by them. So how are we going to? I had a discussion with somebody yesterday. How can we take it back? How can we start? I gave them a good example. You drank Coca-Cola before, and now we hear you can't. So you went to Pepsi, you can't. You wanted Kui, you can't anymore because it's all one company. You went to the Jive. I thought it was Jive. We went and bought Jive. Now we realize even Jive is not. So what are we going to do? And his explanation was we owned it all. When these people came and gave us offers, we sold it. So what did we do? We sold it. Why? We were getting a good price for it. But what did we do in return? We sold our souls. If you really look at it, that is what we've done. We've handed it over to them on the silver platter. We looked for that additional money. We got it. But what did we do? We gave away our souls. That is what we've done. So we need to start claiming that back. Starting to look at that, there's great opportunity in this country to look at those particular sectors that we can take back. And it's not difficult. So these are some of the things you're going to look. Why should your mineral wealth, why should you be getting 2%, 4% and 10% of the royalties of the mineral wealth that was blessed upon this beautiful country? Why should we give it to somebody else? Why should we take our fishing industry where small-scale fishermen have been benefiting for many years and giving it to big international companies, okay, and our smaller fishermen families all starving? Why? These are some of the things that we need to look at. You know, we've got so many people in this country that's got no homes. But look at the amount of land we've got available. What stops you from saying, because of what apartheid did to us, Brother Shaman, let's give every South African family, every South African family, even a single parent family, in other words, a mother that's got children, or a father that's got a child, but not me, give each one a piece of land in the area that they live. What is difficult about that? Don't worry about the water and the electricity. Give them the land. You gave them the dignity. You gave them the identity. Once you give them that, you will see they will even start building on their own. Then you start providing the water, sanitation, and electricity as you can. So these are the things people should be looking for. How is my country going to, when I vote, how is this party going to benefit us? How is it going to make a difference in our life? These things that I'm talking about, Brother Shepherd, is things that are achievable. When I talk about the mining, I've raised it to the minister. Well, how is it that we're getting the crumbs? Why can't it at least be a 50-50? While the private sector can run it, you understand? But 50% of its profits must come to the people, must be. And he agreed with me on the issue of land, for everybody to give a piece of land which they can call up, whether they put a shack there, whatever. It's theirs, they own it. You know, it gives them their dignity. What stops you from giving them that? You can if you want to do it. It's achievable. You're talking about crime in the country. You can put another million police officers, Brother Shavar, another million. You will not solve the problem of crime. Deal with the socio-economic condition under which the people live. Look at it. Again, I said last year 91,000 children gave birth to children. Look at what has happened now. Christmas, they bought it. 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds are giving birth. You know that alcohol is one of the most destructive commodities in the world. In our country, everywhere you go, that is all you hear about the alcohol, the effects of it, the destruction it's causing. But you are allowing it because you want our people to suffer and remain poor. Look at this continent. It's got all the wealth, but it controls nothing. So these people control everything because you have allowed them to take it and control it. Change that. Take back what is yours. Take back what is rightfully yours from these people. That is all I'm saying. So choose parties that are going to make that difference for you.
Yeah, that's a good point indeed. I'm looking at a question on the screen here. It's from Umar, who says, I'm simply addicted to this man, Brother Shafaz Ahmed Khan. And alhamdulillah, you bring out the best also. Rami Mehi, jazakallah for that. And he says, Ahmed, in the evolving landscape of South Africa, or the South African society and governance, particularly as we approach the 2024 elections, the role of the public servants has never been more critical, Ahmed. This election presents an opportunity for transformative change, setting the stage for a new breed of civil servants marked by their drive for innovation, empathy, and a commitment to collaborative progress, not those that looks like overweight, simply sluggish and arrogant and opinionated and a chip on the shoulder. Ahmed, it's time to get rid of dregs of society. I tell you, Umar is giving us left, right, and uppercuts, upper hooks, Ahmed.
Yes, jazakallah, Brother Umar. I think the point you basically, and one of the root causes of why we are, as far as the quality of public servants we have and civil servants we have, is because of cadre deployment. We put people in there based on who you know, rather than people that are best capacitated to be able to do the job. And yes, I know some people also raise very serious concerns about the health and wellness of things like security officers, defense force, military, police, and things like that. And I think one needs to understand that it's very, very important that you must be fit for purpose for the particular job that you are holding. And you will find that our quality of civil servants have deteriorated over the years. And that is why, you know, I have repeatedly said there are two things, if you want this country, for me, that are paramount that you need to change if you want this country to really move into the stage of progress and provide a better quality of life for the people. Remember, South Africa remains one of the most unequal societies in the world. The gap between the rich and poor is widening every single day. And let me tell you what are those two things. Number one, I said, never allow any politician to have anything to do with who you employ and who you appoint. Never allow a politician to to be employing anybody. You need an independent body of experts, right, that will deal with human resource, that will interview these people, you know, receive their CVs, after interrogating them, do the necessary and identify the right kind of people for the job. That's the first thing, like you have in many other countries. That's where you find the best people to do the job. Keep politicians totally out. Number two, no politician must have anything to do with procurement. No politician must have anything to do with procurement for tenders, dealing with supply chain. In other words, you need independent people to be, you know, like you have, we have, which we are now working on. Although we're working on it, and we are saying that if they are going to implement it, it's still got a lot of flaws in it. And that is your procurement. We have a procurement bill that is before the House at the moment to deal with supply chain issues. And the problem with that is, number one, because politicians put in people that they want, put municipal managers, CFOs, directors, and all these things, and employ these people, there's an expectation. The same people now will go out and give tenders to people, even though, okay, they don't qualify for the tender, even though that they may not be have the ability to be able to provide that service and things, they give it to them, which is costing this country at least 40% on goods and services alone, which is just estimated to be between 400 and 500 billion rand a year you're losing alone. And that is that corruption that we have is embedded in these people. That is why you'll find the mayor will only employ people that he wants from his own political party. But if you give it independent, where you have nothing to do with it, you're not going to have that problem, because you're going to have, our job as politicians is to conduct oversight and make sure we implement the programs and projects, not to get involved in who gets the job and who doesn't get the job, not to decide who, you know, who must be able to be awarded a contract and not. It should not be. So if you can deal with these two things, yes, indeed, you can change that. But the other thing is this about civil servants. We must also remember, if you take the police officers, let me say to our people, our police officers, if you take a constable takes home 8,000 rand a month. Now tell me for eight, that the moment he or she puts on that uniform, their life is in danger. You saw in a couple of months, 70 of them have died already. Don't you think that the civil servants, particularly people like police officers and healthcare workers, should be well taken care of? If you look at the money that is stolen in this country, we can take good care of our civil servants. Now, if you pay a person 8,000, and I'm not condoning, I'm not saying that because you're getting 8,000, you're entitled to go and steal and be corrupt. No, it's wrong. It's absolutely, you have a responsibility to protect the people. But tell me, with 8,000 rand, living in an informal settlement in a shack, using public transport with a gun protruding from the side, where people are attacking you and killing you to take your guns and things like that. When a police officer leaves in the morning, there's no guarantee he's or she's coming home. There's no guarantee. It's on track, there's a greater chance you won't come home. So we need to be mindful of these things that, you know, they say that the simple thing, if you pay peanuts, you get the monkey to do the job. This is the situation we find in. Whereas, look at the private sector. Did you see how much these CEOs of these big organizations earn? Millions of rands a month. Millions of rands a month. Now, why are we not dealing with that? That's what we should be dealing. So these big businesses in South Africa are making so much money at the expense of the poorest of the poor of the people. If you saw what happened during this festive season, how, and I was having a discussion again with the manager of the supermarket. I said, no, don't worry if you're going to throw away some of this Coca-Cola, because you know how you'll shock the price. And he agreed with me. The prices were put up ridiculously high. So there's a problem of the, you know, what these people are allowed to do. Competition Commission doesn't come in and deal with this problem. So that is why I say that we need to understand the position of even our civil servants, where they are and what has happened. Look at what happened during COVID. How many of our civil servants that we lost? Did we give any additional benefits to their families, for those loved ones that went out to protect us? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
True, Ahmed. I'm looking at a message from Nafiz. He says, Jazakallah, mashallah, content coming through as usual. He says, Ahmed, I want to know what can be done to restore the country to the trajectory on which peace for all for all is secure. Progress for the downtrodden is sustainable and prosperity is equitably shared. That's a powerful question, Ahmed. How do you respond to Nafiz?
Well, let me tell you, the way things and the policies are designed and the constitution and the structure is designed is the reason why South Africa remains one of the most unequal societies. Now, let me tell you, even the electoral system aids and abets that. And let me tell you why I say that. People are go out there, and there's an ideal example, there's an election coming. People are going to go out and give you food parcels. So once every 3 years or 5 years when there's an election, they're going to give you a food parcel. But for the rest of your life, you've got to be hungry. They will come and they will mislead you and lie to you and tell you we'll deliver this, that, and that. Is there anybody holding these people accountable? Why should you buy a vote? Why do you have to give a food parcel to buy a vote? Should not be allowed at all. Does anybody check all the money that these political parties are getting, how they're getting it to conduct these elections? No. Nobody will take their own money and spend it on it. The money is coming back from the taxpayers. That is why poverty is so high. Because they're stealing from all these structures, provincial, national, local government, through these tenders and procurement, which I just spoke about. In other words, if you're getting a grocery food parcel, you're not getting it from a politician's pocket. You're getting it from the money of the power of the taxpayer in any event. That is the problem that you are assisting. Then the politicians are accountable to their party. They should be accountable to the structures that pay them. If you take a local councillor, he's answerable to his party. He's not answerable to the office of the speaker, which is actually the ones that are paying you through your rates and taxes that you pay. We need to change that as well. But very importantly, the question is, why do people go on and continuously support and vote for those people that have failed them? You will find it. People will vote for you. They'll put you in. You won't deliver. They'll protest. But next election, they go back and still vote for you. So you need to identify the right kind of people, leaders that are committed and dedicated to the cause of serving the people. Get it very straight and clear and get the message out to politicians. You work for me. I don't work for you. You're answerable to me. You are my servant. It's not the other way around. Politicians are the servants of the people. They don't understand this. And you need to get that drilled into them so they can understand they have a responsibility. When politicians come to you now and tell you they're going to deliver, ask them, okay, then tell me, what did you do in the last 5 years for your organization? You ask them. Is designed to keep poor people poor. In fact, the system has been designed by the international community. That is the problem you are sitting in the country. It's designed by the international community to make sure that the entire African continent, for starters, will remain poor and vulnerable. And they will go to any extent, including if you look at what happened during the time of COVID and whatever, they will introduce anything to reduce your population. That is what is going to happen. And how are you going to improve the quality of life and deliver to your people when your entire, every other sector is captured? Every other sector is captured. Look at the price you are paying for a loaf of bread today. It is, the bread is becoming a luxury for people. They can't even afford that. But go down and look at what, if you really break it down and look at what the cost of making that loaf of bread is to them. And if you look at the profit margin that the private sector is making, the big conglomerates, whether you talk about the financial institutions, whether you talk about the motor vehicle trade, the food chain, if you look at the profits that these people are making, is unbelievably high. Nobody talks about these things. So if you want to improve the quality of life of our people, you can't have taverns open 24 hours and think that the people are not going to go and drink. It's destroying our nation. It's destroying our nation. Okay? But we are allowing it. Why? We want you to drive. I give you a good, take these fizzy drinks like Coca-Cola. 90 spoons of sugar. South Africa becoming the diabetes capital of the world. Why, if you are a caring government, if you love your people, why can't you put measures to make sure we have some healthy for our people? You need a holistic approach if you want to create a better life for our people. It's got to be a holistic approach. Otherwise, you're not going to improve the quality of life for people. You cannot, on the one hand, say, what do you expect these people to do? They all are sitting at home, finishing school and sitting at home. There's no jobs available. A country has a responsibility to create an environment that people can be employed.
Yes, Ahmad, looking at a message here from our good friend Aslam. I wonder which Aslam this is. He says, if corruption is not tackled, Ahmad Mansoor Sheikh Imam, head on, it will corrode the state to the extent that it will fail, possibly sooner than most observers think. The way to deal with the corrupt is to empower the state to prevent and combat, investigate, prosecute, and punish them while raking back the loots of the state capture and various other enterprises like the arms deals and so forth, the Hitachi Power Africa deals, and many more. Ahmad, hope this will happen, otherwise we are damned and ruined. Ahmad, how you respond to Aslam there?
Brother Aslam, Jazakallah for that. You are correct. But now, who is going to ensure these consequences of it? Because the people that you might want to take the necessary action are also responsible. It makes me, you know, think about something that I said, that if you have to introduce in South Africa Sharia law for corruption, okay, then we'll have a fingerless government. That's how bad the situation is. So the point is, these political parties, let me give you a good example of what is happening in the ANC and the infighting about the money and things, and you are arresting people and charging them and things. Now, these people haven't been stealing from last month or last year or 5 years ago. They've always been stealing. But the important thing is they have been stealing before more for their party and less for themselves. So in other words, if they got R1 million through corruption, they took maybe 3/4 of that and gave it through their party, and 1/4 they kept for themselves. Now suddenly the ball game changes. When they're getting that millions now, they're taking the majority for themselves and giving very little to the party. I can assure you that if you stop corruption completely overnight, none of the big parties, ANC, DA, EFF, will survive. They'll cease to exist. They won't be able to sustain the expenditure. They can't. That is how bad the situation is. And now when you want to take action against some of them, okay, you have to look back at what you did with them and how they benefited you and your organization 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So the question that I ask, how can you come now and charge me and talk about me? If you heard Zuma repeatedly say, the day that I will talk, you'll be shocked what you're going to hear, what I know. He knows a lot, believe me. But it will also implicate him and many others. So the situation of corruption is it's unbelievable. There is an ideal example. A school is a place for education. Even there, the corruption has started. Because you've got the governing bodies, you've got these people involved in that. They are now dealing with uniforms. There's corruption in the uniforms. You want a specific uniform, you want it to come from a specific supplier only so that they can make money out of it. It's even gone there now. So you can see it's not easy. Unless you apply Islamic ethos and principles yet, you're never going to be able to do it. You know, if you look at some of the... Everywhere there's a coalition government, whoever is in a coalition government at the moment, they are all benefiting. All are benefiting. And that's the problem you're sitting. So if you want to, you need a holistic approach again. You need to close the gaps to it. Who is dealing with the corruption after it's committed? Why not, when you know where the gaps is, stop the corruption before it takes place? And that's what I've been asking them to do. That's the solution I gave them. And I showed them how to do it. I went on to say, let's do this. Every tender that you're advertising in, I give you a good example, in Itegwini, on a monthly basis, advertise that this is the tender that was awarded to Mr. Naidu. This is the amount, this is the name of the company, this is the name of the director. This is exactly the amount of the tender. This is the itemized billing. In other words, you must be able to see that this examination, A4 examination pen, you're paying R9.99 or you're paying R999 for. Put it there so every month when the people read, they'll know who's getting all these contracts. They will be able to see whether the price you're giving the thing for is value for money. And that's where you are losing R400 to R500 million a year because you're not getting value for money. An item that costs R10, you're paying R100. Now tell me how simple it is to do that. Now let me tell you, I've brought this up with the Minister of Finance. He's responded to me to say, but that is a requirement. I said, yes, I know. Are they compliant? He said, no, but they're not compliant. I said, so what are you doing if they're not compliant? Nothing. He's doing nothing. He admits it's supposed to be done. He admits they're not doing it, and he's doing nothing about it. Why? Because he'll be under pressure because all the political parties are doing the same thing. And I promise you, the moment you do that, at least you'll be saving a lot of money. You'll be seeing whether this person is entitled to this contract. Who is? Is he the one that's getting all these contracts? Is he connected to this political party? It's a good example. I asked Minister Godan, tell me this new deal you've done with SAA, right, with Takatso. Is there anybody that you're aware of, directly or indirectly, involved in politics or a politician in this deal? He said, not that he's aware of. Not a direct answer, yes or no. Yet he's part of the deal, main man in the deal. Not that I'm aware of. You see the answer? Straight away, it tells you something is not right.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmad. We have a few minutes to go. This message here from Shabir. He says, Ahmad, China said it was concerned about the escalation of tensions in the Red Sea. And what is China doing? Nothing about this. It seems as if the Houthis are left all alone. Ahmad?
Very good, good question, my brother. But also, what is China doing about Palestine? What is about the Red Sea only? What benefits them? What are they doing about them? What is happening to the Palestinian people? I'm actually very disappointed because these are the countries that we're talking about creating a better environment, including Putin and things, where they can have a more stable, secure world, no domination by one over the other, have peace, stability, social upliftment, more equal society. But how selective, isn't it? Where it only benefits them or suits them, then they all comment. But when it's affecting somebody else, then, so if there's no consistency, it simply means you can't trust all these people. That's what it means.
Yeah, good point. And Shabir also says, Ahmad, there was footage of Britain's defense ministry showing footage of Royal Air Force jets returning to the Cyprus base after the missions. And the U.S. base video showed warplanes apparently taking off from Red Sea bases and ship carriers. One of the bases happened to be UAE and other countries that are playing a double role with us Muslims. Ahmad, that is a very concerning thing. I mean, okay, the Cyprus-Greece thing, we can understand, you know, they have lines. But Muslim countries that are quietly allowing Americans and these guys to fly from their bases. Your thoughts?
This is what I say. We are our own greatest enemies. And he's absolutely correct, my brother. You are correct. That is what is happening. So, you know, I don't know what the reason is, whether they are afraid, whether why they want to toe the line. But, you know, we have everything offered that we necessarily need. Can you imagine if these countries just stood together? How we'd be able to even affect not only Palestine, but all our countries that were having their rights violated. But our people are aiding and abetting. So I say again, we are our own greatest enemies. That's the problem.
Sad indeed, Ahmad. And, you know, I'll not make it easy, but as you said, you know, I always reiterate the points that the biggest, cancer in the house of Islam is the hypocrites, the munafiqeens. And Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, your biggest enemy is the enemy from within, the hypocrites. Beware of the munafiqeen. Ahmad, really a powerful morning in your company on your parliamentary tunes. Perhaps your parting words before we let you go?
My brothers and sisters, third and fourth is thus far the last voter registration because the president might make an announcement on the 8th of February when it's the State of the Nation address. I want to say we are about to lose our sovereignty, our freedom of religion. If you see what is happening in the Western Cape, Western Cape will soon become another Palestine, I can tell you now. So I want to plead with you. This is a do or die election for us. Right. The freedom of religion that we enjoy in South Africa, many countries don't enjoy, not even some of them enjoy in their own Muslim countries. That's how bad it is. So I urge you all, get out there. If you have not registered, register to vote. You can register online. It only takes 2 minutes if you go onto the IEC portal on the website. Please go out there. Make your choice. Make a mark across political parties and leaders that you believe that can make a difference. But this election, you have to vote. Otherwise, only we will be responsible for what will happen in the future. We need to protect our people. We need to protect our ummah. We need to protect our freedom of religion and our rights. You can see how the rights are being violated. You can't even have a poster in your own yard. In your own masjid, you can't have it anymore. So you can see the direction we are moving back to apartheid. And knowing very well that the Zionists are pumping a lot of money into this country, I want to plead with you, go out there and register to vote so that you can participate in these elections and inshallah make a difference so that, and you know, we could at least protect our rights in this country, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.